right now, we are joined by Susan Brown of the Chapel Hill Public Library, a very stable genius, for another round of Talking Books. How are you?
I'm well. I'm not even sure where to go after that intro. I've been called many things in my life.
But not a stable genius?
Until now, no.
Yeah.
I'm now officially a stable genius.
Of all the stable geniuses, you are the stablest.
Or the genius.
Or the geniusist.
I perhaps just negated any thought of being a genius by using a geniusist.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like true genius is the ability to come up with words that have never been used before and still be understood.
I like it.
Right?
And it makes me think of a book.
Oh, good.
Imagine that on a show about books.
Yeah, right?
Making up words makes me think of gobbledygook and my things like that. And my younger son has recently become very interested in, slightly obsessed with Jabberwocky.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say Lewis Carroll.
It's so delightful. I mean, you know, I think many of us know 'twas Brillig and the Slithy Toves.
Did Gyre and Gimble. Gyre and Gimble in the Wabe.
Gyre and Gimble in the Wabe.
Yeah.
And some of the other phrases, but I had not gone back and really reread Jabberwocky with a young child who is first encountering it.
Yeah.
It was great. So
yeah,
it started out, Mom, tell me what each word means.
Oh,
and
nice.
I don't know. And then I was like, ooh, I can make up my own
You
meanings.
Can make up your own. I mean, that's what Humpty did. So,
right?
Yeah.
And then it turned to, I was like, well, the point isn't what the word means. What the words mean.
Yeah.
The point is more what you see in your head when you hear these words.
Right, right.
And it was interesting because it's an illustrated version of it. So this artist had done their version of it. But I was like, that's not cool because those aren't the pictures that are
in
my head. So then I read it to him and I said, don't look at the pictures. Just close your eyes. And after each couple of phrases, you tell me what's in your head.
This is what makes you an awesome librarian.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So we had a blast.
That's
and
great.
The pictures in his head were pretty similar to mine, like kind of swampy, like icy swampy and kind of dank.
Right.
Like a Jabba the Hutt kind of a creature and all of this.
Well, you're thinking that because it's Jabberwocky, right?
Well, Jabberwocky, right.
Yeah.
And the Star Wars thing.
Right.
But it was really interesting because the book, the illustrated version of it was none of that. It was like completely different. So it was really interesting.
That is true because like my image in my head when I think of Jabberwocky is totally derived from the two-part TV movie that came out in the 80s. Do you remember when this came out with like Carol Channing and Lloyd Bridges and
what?
A whole bunch of like this huge long cast of characters, and they did this like huge like TV miniseries where Alice in Wonderland was the first part and then Through the Looking Glass was the second one, and they had this whole like Jabberwocky very bad computer graphics, I think. If you go back and watch it now, like I'm sure the graphics do not hold up, but when you're five and you're watching this on TV, they totally do. This like dragon-y Jabberwocky thing. So that's the image that I have in my head, but it's like given to me by this TV director.
Right.
So yeah. That's interesting.
That makes me think of many things. So this conversation today could just go in many different directions. But it also makes me think of readers and different types of readers. And I have a dear friend who described this to me once. I'm not going to say it as eloquently as he did. But like some people read and they see the pictures in their head. And some people read and they hear the voices. So I tend to hear the voices. Like when I'm reading, I am an aural reader. Like everything, I can hear it in my head. I'm less visual, which he also told me is why I struggle with audiobooks. Audiobooks, and they've only recently started clicking for me because I don't want somebody, I've heard the voices in my head.
Yeah.
Which makes me sound crazy. There are voices. But then, like, my husband is a visual reader, so he doesn't like seeing the movies because he's established when he reads fiction, he's painting the picture
interesting.
In his head. Right?
Yeah.
So this is a whole thing. So Jabberwocky is an interesting exercise in all of that.
What's the word that took from Jabberwocky? Chortled, right?
Chortled,
Chortled was the one that actually caught on and became
and
part of the language.
And there's another one, I think, too.
Was Gyre, was that? That couldn't have originated
I think, Anyways, and now we're reading Alice in Wonderland. And once we go through that, I'm sure we'll read through The Looking Glass, and we're having a delightful time.
That's really cool. Wait, did he like read Jabberwocky independently of the book then? Is that what happened?
Yes, he checked out from the Estes Hills. Shout out to Estes Hills. from the library. It's an illustrated stand. It's just Jabberwocky. So it's this like illustrated, kind of a picture book of it.
That reminds me of, this was when I was in grad school at Rutgers. The Rutgers, like, student theater group did the Rocky Horror Show, the live, the musical, the original one that the movie was based on. But they had people, like, they did the show, they did, you know, they had the play, but they had cast members sitting off to the side making comments as audience members. And it's like, that's not okay, because the whole point of the audience shouting comments is that it's the audience like actively participating and doing it on their own. It's grassroots. If you're telling us what to say,
it feels a little
it's not that
inauthentic.
Cool grassroots democratic anymore. Right. And then one guy actually shouted something else from the audience that the cast members didn't say, and it felt awkward when he did. And that was just like completely defeated the purpose of Rocky Horror. Anyway, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah. Twas brillig and the slithy toes.
All right. So
I do have to share one more story there. It's totally random and not really about books, but I can't get it out of my
head. This is talking books.
This next part will not be talking books.
Okay, gotcha. I'm looking forward to this already.
You mentioned the bad 80s version of Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, I thought it was
90s.
A great version.
Oh, a great version.
I loved it. I love it now.
Bad CGI.
I think bad CGI,
right?
Yeah.
So this was years ago. And my nephews, who are now grown, were in their Lord of the Rings phase. Mm-hmm. And so they had come to visit me. This is when we lived in Carrboro. We'd watched, like, we had binge watched all the Lord of the Rings. We spent this weekend with crazy Aunt Susie watching Lord of the Rings. And they were all done. And they were like, what are we going to watch next?
Is it like the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings?
Yes. Yeah. So this is when Vizart was still there.
Yeah.
And we'd been talking about different shows to watch. And I don't know how we got on it. I don't remember how we went from Lord of the Rings to Land of the Lost. Do you remember the show Land of the Lost?
No, that's fine.
We somehow got there. Like, other shows they had. And seen things from my childhood. So I started telling them all about this show. And I was like, you know, there was this TV show, Land of the Lost, and Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
Right.
And so that was like, what, the late 70s, early 80s?
80s, I think. Yeah, something like that.
And they, you know, go through this waterfall, and now they're with the dinosaurs. And the boys are like, that sounds awesome. And I was like, I'm going to see if Vizart has it. So I walk over to Vizart. Sure enough, they had, like, you know, the first season of Land of the Lost. I was like, awesome. I'm so excited. I, like, go home. I was like, guys, this is, like, one of the best shows ever. And we put it on. You see where
was
I'm going.
Was it not one of the best shows
the
ever?
Visuals.
Don't.
Going from the amazing visuals of the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings.
Don't go back. You can never go back.
Like, the, not Sasquatch, the Sleestak.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, the people, like, running in front of the green screen, obviously. And they were just like, what? Like, they were 10 minutes. They were like, no.
This is
sorry,
not okay.
No.
Yeah. No.
So, bad CGI is revisiting your childhood. You can't go back again.
That's hilarious.
Land of the Lost. If you don't know what I speak of, look it up, folks.
Or don't. Or don't. I mean,
you won't
God,
be missing much.
We all just watched Star Wars. We go from that to
That's
Land
right.
of the Lost. This is it's not okay. All
but
right.
now let's really talk books.
Okay, we've got Susan Brown here in the studio, Chapel Hill Public Library. We're talking books. So let's shift to the serious topic, because we got MLK Week coming up with a whole bunch of different. UNC does their whole week of activities, the march in Chapel Hill and the other one in Hillsborough that the NAACP is putting on. We're just talking about the Orange County stuff, obviously events happening all over the community. Is the library doing anything for MLK Day or week?
The town does lots of things.
Right.
So the library does a lot of things like our book displays and reading lists and all of that types of things. And then as a town, so many town offices, so MLK Day is a holiday. As with several holidays, the library is actually open, I believe, from 1 till 5 on Monday. But the town has a staff employee celebration, and it's awesome. It's one of the coolest. I had never worked at a place that had celebrated MLK Day quite like this. Mm-hmm. So the employees from across the town come together, and there's like a gospel choir made up of employees. We have a poetry contest. So we have, you know, you'll have bus drivers and HR staff and parks and rec people from all over the place that write poetry inspired by MLK. We always have a speaker. So 1 year it was Howard Lee. 1 year it was Valerie Fouché.
Nice.
Forget whose speaker it is this year, but there's music, there's art, there's community, so that's a little bit more internal for the town. There's several days of service, so there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You can go to the Town of Chapel Hill website and see what's happening.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So with MLK Day, MLK Week, and Martin Luther King as our inspiration, let's recommend some books. So first of all, just to get it out, Why We Can't Wait by Martin Luther King Jr., got to be recommendation number one, which I think has the letter from Birmingham Jail in it, if I remember right. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not sure.
If it doesn't, then Google search letter from Birmingham Jail and read that too, because that's the vital piece of writing from Martin Luther King. First and foremost, before the speeches, before the books, before the autobiography, that letter I think is the most significant like piece of writing he did. And that's saying quite a bit, because he did a lot of great pieces of writing that he produced before he died. So
yes.
That's my first recommendation.
Okay, so that's a perfect segue into mm-hmm. my first recommendation, because you recommended the sort of piece of writing that kind of started it all,
right.
The early stuff. I want to recommend, this is part of a series. It's a series put out by a publisher called Melville House, which is a great publisher. They're a small independent publishing house. They do some really interesting stuff. You would like them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I hate to say obscure, but sort of off the beaten track things. They do some really, really interesting work. And they do a series called The Last Interview. And it is some of the last writing and last interviews before a significant famous person, celebrity, author had passed.
Okay.
So it's a whole series. They have them for everybody from Salinger to David Bowie to Nora Ephron to Lou Reed, and they have one for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And it includes a really interesting conversation with Robert Penn Warren.
Mm.
It's also got his very last interview, which was conducted, I think, just like a week before he was killed.
Okay.
It's a really interesting series. It's an interesting kind of concept. And so I'm going to recommend Martin Luther King Jr., The Last Interview, which is part of a whole series from Melville House called The Last Interview.
Because like his last speech is a famous one. It's the mountaintop speech that he gave. But this goes deeper than that
right.
into other things.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It's a great series. And this is a great one in it.
Okay. Very cool. All right. So I was thinking about, I always try to recommend children's books as
mm-hmm.
well. So you're smiling. I don't know if you've got you might have the same one, but probably not, because I was thinking about like diversity in children's books. And we still to this day have a problem with the vast, vast majority of protagonists in children's books being white males or white people in general, males in particular. But what is a classic children's book that has an African-American protagonist? And the one that I remember reading and loving when I was a kid is The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats, which
yes.
is like a classic dating back to what, the 30s, 40s, something like that? It was a very
don't
old
remember.
Book.
Is it that? I don't think it's that old, is it?
I think it?
It
is. I could be wrong about this. We're both looking it up right
I know.
Now,
he won this 1963 Caldecott for illustrating
okay.
The Snowy Day.
Oh, I must have transposed the 3 and the 6.
That's it.
That's probably what it was. Okay, so early 1960s, Ezra Chad Keats writes this book, but it's a classic book. It's great. It's one of the first really like major, ubiquitous works of children's literature that has an African-American protagonist. So got to recommend that one.
So Ezra Jack Keats is so interesting, because if you just read his books, you may not know that he's not African-American.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really known for introducing what we would now call multiculturalism, diversity, inserting that into mainstream kids fiction. So yes to The Snowy Day. And I love, as did both of my kids, all of his books about that whole crew, Peter's chair, and goggles.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because he introduced characters who, there's a big movement now for diverse children's books and this idea of books as a window or a mirror, right? Mm-hmm. So we either look for books as a window into worlds and people, worlds that are other than ours and people that are not like us.
Yep.
Or we look to them as mirrors, so we see ourselves in them. And so what he did, I think, was both of those, probably more importantly, was establishing picture books as mirrors for African-American children who lived in the inner city, who were had rich, valid, important stories to tell. So I think all of his books, most people know The Snowy Day, but there are so many other ones. Mm-hmm. And they were often... You know, both of my boys have gone through the schools now with the Common Core and all of these different, kind of standards and things, and they have both had to write, there's a standard about small moments. Teachers in like grades 3 and 4 have kids mm-hmm. write about small moments, and these aren't big grand stories, they're small moments. And I feel like so many of Ezra Jack Keats' works were those small moments.
Yeah,
going out on a snowy day.
Yeah.
Or losing, like finding a pair of goggles and then losing them in your neighborhood. So yes, I could go on and on about him.
Very cool.
They're awful. They're awesome.
They're awful.
They're awesome. It's been a long day. It's been a lot of talking. They're awfully awesome.
There you go.
Okay, another awesome segue.
Yes.
So I wanted to bring up not a singular book, but a whole bunch of books. There is an award that's been around, I'm not sure how long, not that long. I guess it has been, maybe since the 70s. I thought it was more recent. Anyways, doesn't matter. The Coretta Scott King Book Awards. So named for Coretta Scott King, and these are given annually to outstanding African-American authors and illustrators of books for children and young adults that demonstrate an appreciation of African-American culture and universal human values. Yes, I was reading straight from their website, but I wanted to get it right. So if you are looking for diverse books that are outstanding, that are recognized for their excellence, I would point you to the annual Coretta Scott King, both the long list, the short list, the finalist, and the winners.
Awesome.
They are, last year's winner was John Lewis. That was the author award. So they give an author award and then an illustrator award. And last year's illustrator award was called Radiant Child. It's a picture book, and I never know how to say his name. The artist Jean-Michel
Basquiat.
It's one of those words that I always see printed, but I never say about that artist.
Oh wow!
It's a great
book.
So those are the two recent ones. But if you're looking for diverse, wonderful children's books. Both. So what I love about it is they give one for an author for an older book, for an older grade reader, and then one for a illustrator book. They're wonderful.
All right. I've got one more recommendation. I'll make it a quick one because we're starting to run out of time. But I can't let Zora Neale Hurston go unmentioned since she's got the UNC connection. Their Eyes Were Watching God. Let's make sure that gets recommended for this session.
You just did.
There you go.
You made sure.
I did.
Next week we're going to talk about Mr. Frederick Douglass.
Yes.
Because
his 200th birthday is coming up.
Right.
Yep.
And the celebrations start next week. So that will be all. Check us out. We've already got our topic for next week.
There you go.
Week.
Yeah. We usually come up with it like 5 minutes in advance. So, okay. So a lot of people are having 200th birthdays this year. Frederick Douglass. We got the year-long celebration here in Orange County and a lot of events. William Holden, who was the governor of North Carolina during Reconstruction and was... had a kind of spotty history on race, but stood up to the KKK. It was like the one Southern governor who did that and got impeached and booted out of office for the crime of standing up and fighting back against the KKK, is having his 200th birthday this year as well. And I just found out Elizabeth Keckley. Yeah, who is another major figure. Hillsborough, grew up in Hillsborough, born into slavery, goes on to work for Mary Todd Lincoln, becomes a confidant. Her 200th birthday is this year.
Yes,
and so I didn't know that until today.
There are folks in Orange County and especially in the Hillsborough area who are planning a whole bunch of things to celebrate and commemorate Keckley as well. So there's lots to learn and celebrate and commemorate and engage with in the coming weeks and months.
1818 was a momentous year.
It was.
Yeah, right?
It was.
Really significant. All right, so next week, Frederick Douglass, we'll talk about him. Susan Brown, thank you so much.
Thank you.